We'll open this meeting of the Local Government Committee for the House of Representatives. Would the secretary please take the roll?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Vice Chair Bertolio.
Here.
Vice Chair Cohen-Auer.
Present.
Representative Bishop.
Here.
Representative Galloway.
Present.
Representative Gist.
Here.
Representative Gunderson.
Here.
Representative Cordum.
Here.
Representative Sprunger.
Here.
Representative Zolnikov.
Here.
Representative Thane.
Here.
Representative Rexton.
Here.
Representative Seekings Grow.
Here.
Representative Lynch.
Here.
Representative Essman.
Here.
Representative Kearns.
Excused.
And Chair Brewster.
Here. Just a few notes before we start. Please silence your cell phones. If you must take call, please step out of the committee room. If you wish to give testimony, please sign in at the door, providing your name and affiliation. And when you get up to give testimony, please spell your last name for the record. I want to remind you that any information you give is in your testimony is a public record. So the following bills have been scheduled today: House Bill 211, House Bill 1998, and House Bill 215. And we'll start with 111, but because it's my bill, I'm going to give the gavel to the vice chair.
We will now hear House Bill 211. Representative, would you like to open on your bill?
You all know me. Larry Brewster, State Representative from House District 44 in Billings. This is my second term, and I'm happy today to bring you House Bill 211. Subdivision review is something that was identified in the Governor's Housing Task Force report as a significant obstacle to meeting our state's housing needs. As I spent a number of years in the City Council, and the Billings City Council reviewed quite a few subdivisions during that process. And I would agree that we can do a lot better in dealing with subdivisions in Montana. This bill makes some common sense changes to streamline and improve the Subdivision and Platting Act. It makes phased developments more predictable for housing providers. It gives more flexibility to applicants to respond to neighborhood input without having to start the process over. It keeps it moving along. I do intend to propose a few minor changes to terms used within the bill, just how they're worded, those kind of things. And it'll be with the sponsor amendment, and some of the proponents will discuss that for you as they give testimony. We have a good group of proponents today that have really good information. They're going to walk you through some of the bill and why it's needed, and I encourage you to ask them a lot of questions. Keep them on their toes. Madam Chair.
Are there proponents in the room?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Alan McCormick. I'm an attorney with Garlings and Lana Robinson in Missoula, and today I appear before you representing the Montana Association of Realtors. And with your permission, Madam Chair, I have the amendments that Representative Brewster mentioned. May I hand them out?
Yes, please. And please spell your name for the record.
First name Alan, A-L-A-N. Last name McCormick, M-C-C-O-R-M-I-C-K.
Thank you.
This bill touches on three subjects, all related to subdivision review and making the process better. the first subsection here, and I'm going to walk through the basics of each one, and then I'll tell you.
Madam Chair, could we have him bring the mic to his, so it's a little easier to hear. Thank you.
I will lean forward.
Thank you.
And stoop.
I'm going to walk through each one of these sections.
That's better.
That
thank you.
Much better. And then we'll talk about the amendments to them, because the amendments are relatively minor and result from some good conversations that we've had with various other groups who are interested parties. So the first subsection, section one of this, deals with this kind of odd statute called the Subsequent Hearing and New Information section. This was added to the Subdivision Act maybe 12 years ago or so, and effectively it says if during the process, the review process, if there's a material change to your subdivision application or new information comes in, gets put down on the table, comments you've never heard of, pilot documents you've never seen before, the governing body has an obligation to take a look at those, that information, to decide whether it's new and credible. And if they're going to base their decision on it, they have to then hold a subsequent hearing. It's a clunky process, and these amendments are intended to streamline that a little bit. Right now, if you have good comments during a process, you're the applicant for a subdivision, maybe there's a good suggestion that says you need to move your road over 150 feet. It needs to connect to the county road in a different location, something like that. It's going to be deemed a material change to your application or a substantial change to the application. And you have to go back to the beginning. You have to start over with a new application fees, new sufficiency and completeness review, and that doesn't make a whole lot of sense. So what this bill does is it changes this new information statute to say, basically, if something new comes up, including a material change to a subdivision application, you don't have to start over. Gives the government the opportunity to have a subsequent hearing on it. Makes it easier for your local government to have a subsequent hearing on it so you don't have to start over. It makes it easier for them to say, you know, we've heard some new information here, or the applicant has a good idea for a material change to the application. Let's put the brakes on it. Let's hold a subsequent hearing, and then we'll let people digest the information, let the public participate a little bit more, and then reconvene to make a decision. So hopefully that change allows these subdivision applications to continue through the process, all while maintaining public participation, public's right to know, public's right to take into consideration the new information. The second subsection deals with a different section of the statute, and it's the phased subdivision statute. This was added maybe 6-8 years ago to the Subdivision Act, and it basically says if you're going to do your subdivision in phases, you first have to let the government know up front. You have to plan out your phases. They can go out up to 20 years now, but you have to tell the government up front, these are the phases, these are the order that the phases are going to come in, and these are the deadlines by which I'm going to get my phasing done. Right now, before each phase, and this was the material change that was added, before each phase, you have to come back before the governing body, have another hearing to decide whether there are changed circumstances that would justify the government imposing additional conditions on it. And that's for every phase of the development. Doesn't matter whether you have 2 or 20. And what this bill would do, the change to this section would do, is say that doesn't quite make sense for at least the initial phases. If you come in, if you get your preliminary plat approval, which is good for 3 years, and you want to do phases, and you come in at 9 months to get final plat approval for your first phase, you have to have another hearing. And that doesn't make a whole lot of sense because the circumstances certainly have not changed enough to justify that sort of thing in the interim. So this changes that a little bit, and it puts a 5-year sort of exemption to it. So for the first 5 years of phases, when you bring in those phases for approval, it would exempt from those from additional hearings. After 5 years, there's going to be a continued need to have hearings on those to determine whether the circumstances have changed. Maybe the traffic pattern has changed significantly. Maybe there's a new DEQ rule or something out there that needs to be taken into consideration. It makes sense that we exempt a certain amount of phases within a certain amount of time, and this bill would do that so that we're not coming back in at a year and a half to rehear. Honestly, hearings aren't that much fun. And so to the extent that we can speed up the process a little bit without compromising the public's right to participate in the process, that's what this bill would do. The final section of this, section 3, quite a number of you in the room I recognize from 2 years ago when we brought before you a bill that was called the Expedited Subdivision Review Bill. This was an idea that would exempt subdivisions from subdivision review, significant subdivision review, if the subdivision met zoning, met your growth policy, complied with subdivision regulations, and had all the right infrastructure in it. The example I gave you at the time, you can see it developing down here, the old Capitol Hill Mall site. It meets zoning. As long as you're complying with all the rules and regulations, why do we need to spend a year going through a subdivision review to develop a project on that site? Building permits, you can get a building permit for a 500-unit apartment complex, but you want to do three lots, you got to take about up to a year to go through the subdivision process. Didn't make sense for the subdivisions that complied with all the rules and regulations. Didn't quite work. And so what this bill does is it makes some tweaks to it. We did not allow in that bill, we did not allow that process, we did not allow for subdivision or variances from subdivision regulations. And as it turns out, there's hardly a subdivision that goes through the process now that doesn't have some little variance needed for it. And so this, the change to this bill builds in a process for subdivision variances. It adds more time to the deliberation, and you may recall the deliberation on these is limited to a determination of whether or not the subdivision does in fact meet the zoning, meet the infrastructure requirements, meet the subdivision regulation. But it scrubs out all of the discussion about, is this a good idea? The reason it scrubs that out is because you've already got zoning in place, so you've already made the decision that the land use you're proposing is a good idea. And so by adding in this provision for variances, what that's actually telling you is that subdivision codes are problematic. And as we encourage local governments to go through and look at their subdivision regulations to figure out why are we granting so many variances, this at least, until we can get them to do that, this builds in the ability to bring in a variance so that you're eligible to use this this expedited review to speed up subdivisions. And the other tweak to this that we didn't quite get right is we said it's mandatory within city limits. But it's optional for counties. And what we said is that if you're in a county and you had a county sewer and water district and you met all of these other things, you had zoning, you had comprehensive planning, you've made all these decisions, you'd be eligible for subdivision review. What we didn't realize is a place like East Missoula has zoning, comprehensive planning, subdivision regulations, has everything that you need, but it also has sewer and water, but it's the city's sewer and water. It's not a county sewer and water district. So this fixes that problem. There are a number of other jurisdictions around the state where you have municipal services going outside the boundary of the city where this bill would be perfectly reasonable to use for. That was the intent from the beginning. We didn't quite get it right. So hopefully with these changes, the expedited review starts working, starts getting implemented, starts working, and takes off. Let's talk about the amendments. As I mentioned, the amendments that we proposed are based on conversations that we've had with others who have reviewed the bill. The first one just makes a clarification. It's on the section one to note that with this new information, you're basing the decision on not just information that comes in, but public comments or information, just to make it clear that there's public comments with that. We had a request that the word material, you'll see several changes of material to substantial. We had a request to change that word because substantial is already used in the act and material is not, so it provides some consistency. Then we had a request, would be on the second, it's kind of the third page in the way the formatting is working here. We had a request to delete the words of law. Because right now, in a subdivision process, local governments have to issue findings of facts. And lots of them then do conclusions, and we didn't want to suggest that we were adding in a new criteria to add conclusions of law. And so we struck of law just to make that consistency as well. There is also, to the end of Section 2, an applicability clause. It was pointed out to us that if we change the phase subdivision in terms of the exemption from which phases require an additional hearing, if we didn't put an applicability clause that it applied to subdivisions submitted and reviewed after October 1st, we'd create a heck of a lot of confusion in does it apply retroactively, does it apply prescriptively. So we're fixing that by adding in an applicability date. And then the final change is to the subsection 3. And this is clarifying. The original language said, sort of got rid of the county water and sewer district and instead said any publicly regulated services, sewer and water services, would be eligible for this. And it was pointed out that that caused some confusion. Is a community septic system serving 15 people a publicly regulated system? Arguably, yes. But that wasn't the intent. And so this language here of putting back in what had been deleted, a county water and or sewer district, but then also saying it could also be served by a city, town, county, or consolidated city, county, water and sewer services now broadens it up to open that up to additional potential subdivisions located in the county. I know that's a lot to digest. I know there are lots of others to speak, so I'll sit down and answer any questions you may have later.
Thank you, Mr. McCormick. Are there other proponents in the room?
Madam Vice Chair and members of the committee, my name is Glenn Opel. Last name is O-P-P-E-L. I'm the policy director for the governor. Appreciate the work that the development community and the sponsor have done on this legislation. I think, as most of you know, the governor had created a housing task force last year, and it met the latter half of last year and came up with a report. And one of the things that they identified in the report is that regulations at the local level are one of the reasons that we're having some challenges with housing supply. And that's what's also driving up the price of housing. House Bill 211 is really a step in the right direction from the governor's standpoint on addressing those regulatory barriers to housing affordability. This legislation makes some sensible changes to the Subdivision and Planning Act, and we think it's a good bill, and we'd recommend your support. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Opel. More proponents in the room.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Corey Shaw. It's S-H-A-W. I'm the executive director for the Montana Building Industry Association. And I'd like to thank the sponsor and the individuals who put some work into this bill. From a builder's perspective, we feel this bill is great at streamlining processes, removing complicated and duplicative processes, and will only serve to expedite the availability of housing in Montana. So we urge you to support this bill. Thank you.
Thank you. More proponents in the room.
Excuse me, Madam Vice Chair, committee members, Sam Sill, Montana Association of Realtors. I think Mr. McCormick explained the bill very well, so I'm not going to touch on any more of that, but I did want to mention to you all that this bill is also supported by the Montana Association of Planners, which is a group of both local government and private sector land use planners who are very familiar with how the process works, and again, on both sides of the aisle, public and private. Unfortunately, the representative, Andrew Hagemeyer, some of you may remember him, he's a frequent testifier on bills, was not able to be here today. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any other proponents in the room?
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Jennifer Hensley, H-E-N. S as in Sam, L-E-Y, and I stand before you today in support of this bill on behalf of the County of Missoula. So our primary focus in this bill is the expedited review process, specifically changes to 763-623-3AII. The 67th legislature created an expedited review process for certain subdivisions that counties could opt into. Missoula County has actively and strategically aligned our growth policy, zoning regulations, and infrastructure to areas where growth can be easily accommodated. In these areas, the county intends to opt in to the expedited review process as a tool to incentivize development where we want it and increase our housing supply. As the language reads now, Missoula County does not qualify to opt in because of the arrangement of the centralized water and sewer services that serve the identified areas. The language in 211 will provide Missoula County greater latitude to implement the expedited review process tool and increase our housing supply. I want it noted that I think there's going to be an amendment suggested, a friendly amendment during executive action. We also support that amendment. So to be clear, we support the bill with or without the amendment, but we really do support the bill with the amendment. Thank you. With your permission, may I be excused from the hearing so I could be on first floor to testify?
Are there any questions? Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Go ahead, thank you. Any other proponents in the room? Are there proponents online?
Yes, Madam Chair. We have Charles Lapp.
Mr. Lapp?
Good afternoon. Can you hear me?
Yes.
My name is Charles Lapp. I reside in Kalispell, Montana. Last name is L-A-P-P, Charles Lapp. And I would like to speak in favor of this bill. I've been following it since a lot of the changes were made several years ago, as Mr. McCormick indicated, and the following as the changes were made for this and put into this bill. And I would just be in favor of everything as it was presented by Mr. McCormick and ask you for a favorable vote on this bill.
Thank you, Mr. Lapp. Are there any other proponents online?
No, Madam Chair.
All right, we'll open it up to opponents in the room.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Karen Alley, A-L-L-E-Y. I'm Associate General Counsel with the Montana Association of Counties. Sorry, I had to think all that through. MAGO rises in opposition of House Bill 211 at this point in time. Just a couple of concerns that we have. Most of the concerns that MAGO has had with this bill, we have worked with Mr. McCormick as well as Mr. Sill in addressing those concerns. So many of our concerns are addressed through the amendments themselves. But there are two areas specifically related to the phase development statute. So the first is that the phasing development statute, which is on page 3 of your bill, which is lines 7 through 23, is really the area that's being amended. The first is that it introduces a new deadline within the Montana Subdivision and Planning Act. And so MAGO's position is that there needs to be consistency within the Subdivision and Planning Act. At current, a non-phased subdivision, so any subdivision that intends to be developed all at once, receives their preliminary plat, and that's enforced for 3 years, which is to say that within the 3 years, the developer has to meet all of the conditions of approval that were imposed through preliminary plat and then apply for final plat within 3 years or request an extension. As proposed, in a phased subdivision, all of the phased preliminary plats could be enforced for 5 years, with as many phases being able to be completed within that five-year period and submitted for final plat, which means everything is completed within 5 years. So the solution that MAGO would propose is to allow phases of a phased subdivision to come in for a final plat approval within a three-year period before a public hearing is required. The other issue that MAGO would raise with this is how the new language is worded regarding bringing in a phase after that five-year period. So currently, the current statute and how the process works is that a phase is before a phase is begun, before it's commenced, which is to say before anything occurs, the developer makes application to or contacts the governing body, says, I'm ready to start phase 1, 2, or 3 of my subdivision, which have you. The governing body then holds a hearing, a public hearing, and determines if there's any changes to the primary criteria. That all occurs prior to commencement of the phase. So the changes in this bill state that if a phase is brought in when it is ready for final approval, meaning that all of the conditions have been made or have been met, including installation of like roads and infrastructure have been met. So if there's a change to the primary criteria impacts or new information that would require a change to installation of infrastructure, the developer would then may have to tear out what they've done in order to fall under any new conditions that the governing body may impose. So the solution that MAGO would propose to this issue is that after the five, preferably a three-year period, phases would be submitted prior to the commencement of the phase. And really what we're trying to do is keep development moving through this, because certainly from the county perspective and from working with counties, we don't want to have to see developers restart their work or have to move roads or install infrastructure that then has to be torn out and reinstalled. And so that's the basis for our concerns with the language as is. So with that, I thank you for your time and we'll be available for questions.
Thank you. Any other opponents in the room?
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members of the committee. I am Anne Schwend, S-C-H-W-E-N-D, and I am here representing the Montana Environmental Information Center as their Sustainable Communities Policy Director. I stand in opposition to this bill, but primarily just to one part. I feel like this is basically a good bill. I've been actively involved in paying attention to the governor's housing task force and believe that we do need to have an expedited process. Our concerns are primarily related to handling of new information and public hearings, the public's right to know, and their ability to participate. And regarding that, when I was reading in here something, what it was called material effect, I had concern about what that actually meant, the definition of material effect, and who decides what that is. Is that the governing body, and is that based on our criteria and findings of fact, or what is the what's the bar? It just seemed like it was a little bit vague. Although then I would say that the amendments that Mr. McCormick brought up may address that. I do support when we have additional phases that the local governing body has the ability to impose additional conditions on those new phases based on that new information. And the expedited review, I'm in favor of that in areas where you have existing water and sewer. I think that that's really a good idea. But for the moment, until I've seen the amendments, I just have to say that I'm opposed. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Schwend. Are there any other opponents in the room? Are there opponents online?
No, Madam Chair.
Are there informational witnesses in the room? Are there informational witnesses online?
No, Madam Chair.
All right, let's open it up to committee questions. Representative Gunderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Question, excuse me, for Ms. Schwend.
Ms. Schwend, Representative Gunderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Gunderson.
Madam Chair, Ms. Schwend, I guess I'm not understanding your angst with the word material. And in the amendment, it's been changed to substantial. So not bringing out the dictionary, but when you look at both those words, substantial is a much higher level than material. So is that going to fix your angst with that part?
Representative Gunderson, Madam Chair, yes. I believe that that will. It was just that I felt like the term was vague and I had not seen the amendment. When I heard that, I believe that that's an improvement to that. So thank you.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Vice Chair Kohenour.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And this would be a question for Mr. McCormick, if I might.
Mr. McCormick.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Mr. McCormick. I'd just like to follow up on a couple of the issues that were brought forward by the opponents. Are you guys continuing to have some conversations about those concerns and kind of where were you in working with those entities on the concerns before coming today?
Representative Kohenour, Madam Chair, Alan McCormick. We are continuing to have conversations, yes. All the conversations have been friendly and generally productive. We have some disagreement with the suggestions on the angst, to use Representative Gunderson's term, in that the Subdivision Act is an odd duck. And so when you want to talk about consistency, that's the wrong word to use for this act. So one of the requests has been to change the 5 years to 3 years to be consistency, because when you go in for your preliminary plat approval, the government can approve your preliminary plat for a maximum of 3 years. But you can ask for phases up to 20 years. So you can get this weird approval where you technically have to get everything done in 3 years, but you've already asked for permission to take 20. I'm seeing blank stares, and trust me, it gets odder from here. And so our belief on the 5 years is that it does not create a new deadline. It does not create a disconnect. It just, the way a typical subdivision works now of any size, it's taking you more than 3 years to get it done anyway. And so you're coming back and asking for additional time to move that process along. And so that doesn't really create a deadline. It's just saying any of your phases that occur within that first 5 years don't have to go through that hearing to evaluate for changed circumstances is the word that it's used now. And I'm drawing a blank on the other opposition. I'd be happy to discuss it if someone has a particular question and can remind me what it is.
The other one was the concern about the public right to know and participate. What are those limitations, basically the concerns that were brought forward by Ms. Schwend?
Yeah, the public right to participate and know with the new information statute, we kept that in. And the whole reason that it changed however many years ago, about 12 years ago, was some concern that changes were being made to applications and new information was being put on the floor at the last minute that nobody had an opportunity to review and look at. And so the statute built in this process that allows the government to make a determination. Is this new and credible? In which case, we'd better allow the public another opportunity to review it. Or is it not credible or not new because it actually does exist out there and people have had an opportunity to look at it? Or we're not going to base our decision on it, in which case we don't have to have another hearing. That fundamentally stays in. And so if it just makes it easier, you're not having to go through this complete analysis of, is it new, is it credible, are we going to base our decision on it? You can just decide whether it's new, whether it's credible, and if the subdivider is making a material change at, say, the hearing before the city council, it's obviously new and it's credible, and it makes it easier for the government to say, we'd better have another opportunity for the public to participate. It doesn't scrub it out. It actually makes it easier for that to occur. So in that vein, we think we're fixing the problem. I know Mako mentioned the issue with subdividers potentially coming in, having built their roads and the like, and then having to tear things out. We don't see that as a concern because the way the Act works right now with the phased subdivision, or the way that the new version would work, is if your subdivision phase is going to be approved more than 5 years after the preliminary plat approval, you have an obligation to notify the government not more than a year before that phase comes in to say, looks like I'm going to be late. That triggers the obligation for the government to have that hearing. So it puts a burden on the developers to make sure they're getting the timing right. And if you wait till the fourth year and the 11th month and the 10th day, you're not going to have stuff done. And your approval is not going to get done until after that fifth year. And so hopefully we don't have folks out there foolish enough to have been putting in their infrastructure at the fourth year and the 11th month without having notified the government of this issue. So it puts a burden on developers to make sure they're getting that timing right. There's no question about it. And that's okay. That's a responsible way of going through the development process and making sure your approvals are all lined up.
Can I have a follow-up question for Mr. McCormick? Thank you. And I just wanted to follow up on that 5 years versus the 3 years. A complex, non-phased subdivision could take as long as a phased subdivision. And so why do you think there should be a difference between the 3 years and the 5 years? Because to my mind, those should be the same. You're telling me that you're going to go past the 3 years on your phased already. So why couldn't we just have them be the same and allow for the hearing to take place if it's between the 3 and 5 years and allow for folks to know what that phased, the changes possibly could be to that phased information?
Representative Konauer, Madam Chair, let's roll up the sleeves and make this even odder. The key word you just used was that you had a complex non-phased subdivision. This statute doesn't even apply. And so this whole process of coming back in is only if you, and you are required by statute to tell the government up front whether you're going to do phases. If you are, this statute kicks in. If I've got a 100-lot subdivision and it's complex and I don't want to do it in phases, I want to do it all at once, I get to do it all at once. And if I can't get it done in 3 years, I go back in front of the government and I ask for an extension. That extension has public comments, but this statute doesn't trigger. And so that extension request doesn't actually have a evaluation of whether there's changed circumstances. And that's, I can tell you stories all day about how oddly this act works and why we're trying to make it work a little better.
Thank you. Madam Chair, could I have a follow-up with Ms. Alley?
Ms. Alley? Vice Chair Kohenauer?
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. And I would like to follow up on that last discussion point with you about the 3 years versus the 5 years, because it seems to me that they should be equal in both of those places to allow for that public information, public participation as things are rolling out.
Madam Chair, Vice Chair Kohenauer, I agree. it does make logical sense, and as was previously stated, that yes, a subdivision does have to say upfront, here's our plan, and the plan is either a request for a phased subdivision or the request is we think we can get this done all in one, and all in one means it's up to 3 year preliminary plat approval. It can be as little as 1 year, but there are the opportunities for extensions to preliminary plat.
Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any other questions? Representative Galloway.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This would be for Sam Sill.
Mr. Sill, Representative Galloway.
Madam Chair, Mr. Sill, you had said that you're here representing the planners, our Association of Planners, who I assume work for most of the communities we're talking about.
excuse me, Madam Vice Chair, Representative Galloway, I didn't say that I represented the planners, just that they couldn't be here today and had asked me to mention their support. But to answer your question, you're absolutely correct. In fact, MAP's membership, at least to the extent that I'm familiar with it, is mostly local government planners. There's a few private sector folks, but in general, they are the very same local government planners that are represented by MACO, for instance.
Quick follow-up.
Follow-up.
Madam Chairman, Mr. Sill, so it's safe to say that they didn't have any heartburn with the five-year versus the three-year?
Madam Vice Chair, Representative Galloway, yeah, that's correct. They support the bill.
Okay, thank you. Can I have a follow-up question with Ms. Alley?
Ms. Alley, Representative Galloway.
Madam Chair, Representative.
Madam Chair, Ms. Alley, in our world today, we've had a lot of supply issues, not with just materials, but even with labor. So I guess I'm struggling with what the issue between the 3 and the 5 year is. I mean, in all reality, it's a lot more difficult to get anything done right now than it was even 5 years ago. And if we want to expedite housing, it seems like this would be you're going to help draw me a picture of why this is an issue.
Madam Chair, Representative Galloway, I will do my best to try to draw you a picture. Let me go to my notes on that side. I think where the 3 versus 5 years comes in is that at current, when a phase development gets ready to start a phase, there's, prior to them even starting, they let the local governing body know that they're starting this phase. And at that point in time, there's an analysis of, and maybe not with the first phase, but maybe in subsequent phases, there's an analysis analysis of has there been an adverse impact that the conditions of approval for the original preliminary plat no longer mitigate. And so that's sort of with the 3-year versus 5-year. If you're allowed to bring in as many phases as you want during 5 years, then there's no analysis of have we made an adverse impact to some of the primary criteria.
Follow up.
Well, I'm Madam Chair, Ms. Sally, wouldn't that be in our original approval of the project?
Madam Chair, Representative Galloway, yes, to an extent. A preliminary plat includes a very expansive review and a thorough review of phase development. However, as the development starts actually developing, there could be impacts that weren't anticipated at the time of preliminary plat. So as the longer we go out from preliminary plat, the more, I guess, risk there is to development of hitting up against some adverse impact that wasn't anticipated up front.
One more follow-up. Madam Chair, so Ms. Alley, I mean, if I hear this from a different point of view, it just sounds like we're being paranoid that we can't keep our thumb on the project as it's progressing.
Madam Chair, Representative, I wouldn't call it paranoia so much as the local governing bodies have a burden, if you will, of mitigating adverse impacts and ensuring that how subdivisions are conditioned are to mitigate those. And so it really is a matter of, is there something we didn't anticipate at the time?
Thank you.
Are there any... Representative Gunderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For Ms. Alley.
Ms. Alley, Representative Gunderson.
Madam Chair, Ms. Alley, give me some examples of that adverse impacts that you're talking about.
Madam Chair, Representative. So... I think the largest area where adverse impacts, well, I think there are two areas. Number one would be traffic and traffic control. Has the county road or the city road that for which this development is being built off of, is there too much traffic that wasn't anticipated up front? I mean, are we increasing wear and tear on that road or that needs to be further conditioned so that it's improved a higher standard? Maybe paving is triggered at some point, so we need to be able to account for that. Or also in public health and sanitation, is there an impact to, say, a water system or an aquifer that wasn't anticipated up front?
And follow up. And Madam Chair, Ms. Alley, so how would that differ between a 3-year and 5-year program?
Madam Chair, Representative Gunderson, I think it just comes down to how many in those 5 years of a phase development, how many phases came in and were developed in that amount of time. And so if it's a shorter period of time, the 3 years, which would perhaps suggest fewer phases, you know, are we able to mitigate those impacts sooner rather than later?
Thank you, Ms. Alley. And just a comment. I'm not following how we're differing between the 3- and 5-year time period with ifs, maybes, and mights, Madam Chair.
Noted. Are there any other questions? Questions from the committee? Representative Sprunger.
Madam Chair, this question would be for Ms. Alley, please.
Ms. Alley, Representative Sprunger.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Ms. Alley. Can you speak a little bit to the traffic studies that are completed in conjunction with some of these projects and how they're reviewed in the 3-year versus the 5-year, please?
Madam Chair, Representative Sprunger, sure. As part of preliminary plat applications, typically there is a traffic impact study that's completed. And oftentimes it is on, well, I won't say oftentimes, there are times where that is the only traffic impact study completed for a subdivision, whether it be phased or not. Sometimes we suggest the county's condition subdivision on having future traffic impact studies as the phases go in, but that's discretion based on what's in the record and what the county can condition at the time. So there may not be an additional traffic impact study, but there may, but the public may be able to say there's additional impacts to traffic. Does that answer your question, Representative?
Thank you, Ms. Ellie. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Any other committee questions? All right, Representative Brewster, would you like to close on your bill?
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Just a couple of comments on traffic studies and water studies that are associated with phased subdivisions. In my experience, at least through the years that I was in local government, traffic studies were imposed on the entire subdivision. So they had to design the traffic flow and entries and offsets, and if whatever happened on that subdivision based on that. The only time I saw conflicts was when an adjacent plot of land was developed and they had to reconcile the cross traffic between the two subdivisions and have alignment on it. But that generally worked out between the two subdividers, and if there were minor changes then, it happened. But by and large, I always thought the information that was provided by the studies was more than adequate for even future development that was associated with that subdivision. And almost always it handled the traffic, and the community water utility typically sizes their lines over. And the only time you'd have a trouble would be at the beginning, because they would have an estimate of that particular area and all the land that was available for study. And they would look to see if their water mains and those types of things were adequately sized to provide for that whole area. If not, then the first developer had to pay for the most of it and usually regain some of it back as the rest of the land developed. But I always thought they were far out or far looking when it came to those type of things. The other comment I would make has to do with regulation. And we know that nobody likes regulations. And my experience is that local governments like it least, because they're used to regulating. So when we as a legislature offer regulation to them, sometimes it's awkward for them. And they were resistant to it. But what I would say is I think that this bill is sound. With the new amendments that change some of the language, I think it's workable. I think it'll work for the local governments. And it will also work to expedite that process. So at the end of it, we can develop more land responsibly and get it done sooner. So I encourage you to do pass on this. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Brewster. This closes the hearing on House Bill 211.
Thank you, Madam Vice Chair. We'll now open the hearing on House Bill 198. Would the sponsor like to present her bill?
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Julie Dooling. That's spelled D-O-O-L-I-N-G. I have the honor of representing House District 70, which is all of Broadwater County and the easternmost portion of Lewis and Clark County. Today, I'm presenting a bill to you, House Bill 198, on behalf of my constituents in the business district of Townsend, a small town in the heart of Broadwater County. Back in 2019, I was made aware of a problem occurring in various towns across Montana. Jackson, Lewiston, and Lewistown and Townsend were all facing a similar dilemma. The sidewalks in front of their downtown businesses are all located within the Montana Department of Transportation right-of-way of a state highway running through town. In the case of Townsend, the sidewalks go right to the edge of the building. So the sidewalks are located in the highway right-of-way. And while the businesses are required to maintain these sidewalks free of snow and ice in the winter, according to current state law, businesses are not allowed to utilize the sidewalk in front of their business, in front of their store, to display items for sale, put a sandwich board promoting sales or cafe lunch specials, or any signage showing that the proprietor was simply open for business. While in some towns, MDT ignored the signs, flower pots, or benches, that is until someone complained. House Bill 198 allows the local incorporated municipality to enact ordinances governing the placement of non-permanent encroachments on sidewalks, bypassing the normal permitting process described in 60-6-101 and indemnifying the state as stated in lines 26 through 28 on page 1 of your bill. This new provision is limited only to sidewalks. If the incorporated municipality chooses not to create an ordinance for this process, it defaults to the current permitting process. And with that, I will yield to proponents who can better describe their need for this change. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Dooley. Are there proponents for this bill? Any proponents in the room?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and representatives. My name is Edward Keith Howick Jr., H-O-W-I-C-K. I'm frequently known by a family nickname, JB. My family and I are the owners of Townsend Hardware. We are the oldest continuously operating hardware store in Townsend. We're before you because we've been, my apologies, stage fright is just part of my makeup. We're before you because we have had difficulties over the years with uneven and undescribed challenges by MDT to materials, signage, and merchandise that we had put out on the sidewalks of Broadway. As described, our building faces literally right up to the sidewalk. There is no space between the face of our building and the state right-of-way. Technically, according to the existing law, our front door, when opened by a customer, violates this law. It's tough, but our issue is the uneven and difficult to understand rules governing when we can and cannot do anything. One company will be cited for difficulties. Another company will be ignored. During a time period, festivals, we have no idea if we should be permitting or if we should not be permitting for the sake of utilizing that sidewalk during a festival period. We've had difficulties because in our district, the Department of Transportation supervisor has said that he will never give a permit for merchandise. That's been disheartening, especially since we support the Montana League of Cities and Towns efforts to create a more streamlined permitting process. But what value is that effort if we can't get a permit in the first place? In the end, what we're looking for is an opportunity for our community to make its own choices. We know that we need to accommodate state and federal access laws, no problem. We know that we need to accommodate appropriate liability, that this must be passed to the city and ostensibly from the city to the companies. Frankly, if my sign gets blown into somebody's car, it doesn't matter if I have a permit for the sign or not, I'm the one that's going to get sued, not the state. So the liability is already mine. What we hope is that we become accountable to our neighbors, to our elected officials, that we have a voice in the process of understanding how these sidewalks can be used for the benefit of our town. We want to be able to present our town both to our neighbors and to tourists in a way that makes sense for us. And I am assured that this is true for most of the towns and cities in Montana. We're not looking for a way to circumvent the need to maintain these sidewalks and rights of way. That all remains under the jurisdiction of the Department of Transportation. What we're looking for is a voice as to how they can be used to better forward the needs of business in our community. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Howick. Are there other proponents?
Good Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Robin Turner. My last name is spelled T-U-R-N-E-R, and I'm here on behalf of the City of Whitefish, and we rise in support of this bill. This would provide our city with the authority to pass ordinances that govern the placement of temporary encroachments on sidewalks for Highway 93. Highway 93 cuts through Whitefish's downtown, and the city is well equipped to govern placement of items on sidewalks lining that place. The law requires Whitefish to follow state and federal laws related to traffic on the sidewalks, which the city is prepared to do, and it removes the process of requesting encroachment permits through the Montana Department of Transportation each time a business owner wishes to use that space outside their buildings. This allows our city flexibility to make decisions about the use of sidewalks within their boundaries, and for those reasons, we request a pass. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Turner. Are there other proponents?
Chairman Brewster, members of the committee, Thomas Jodin, J-O-D-O-I-N. I'm the deputy director and general counsel for the Montana League of Cities and Towns. We stand in support of this bill. It tracks very closely with the work that Mr. Howick mentioned that the league has been engaging with MDT, who has been very great in trying to improve and delegate permitting, review, design systems relative to city-maintained urban routes, MDT routes. These are ongoing work for several years now and more work to do. So we support it. We're committed to working with our members. And I should have mentioned the league represents all 127 incorporated cities and towns in Montana. And we are committed to working with our smaller members that have MDT routes, usually as their main route through town, on ADA compliance to make sure they understand clear, accessible paths and how we can make this work for them and their businesses and their community. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Jordan. Other proponents?
Mr. Chairman, Charles Robison, that's R-O-B-I-S-O-N, here on behalf of the Montana Chamber of Commerce and the 2,000 companies, large and small, we represent across the state of Montana. If you adopt the Representative Dooling's bill here, make life easier for small businesses in towns large and small around the state, and that's something that's better for business and better for the folks that work in those businesses. We urge do pass.
Thank you, Mr. Robison. Any other proponents? Seeing none, there are proponents online.
No, Mr. Chair.
All right, we'll move to opponents. Are there any opponents in the room? Any opponents in the room? Do we have any opponents online?
No, Mr. Chair.
All right, we'll move to informational witnesses. Are there informational witnesses in the room?
Chairman Brewster, members of the committee, my name is Ryan Dahlke with the Montana Department of Transportation, R-Y-A-N. D as in Delta, A-H-L-K-E, and I will be a informational witness for this bill and am available for questions.
All right, thank you very much. Are there any informational witnesses online?
No, Mr. Chair.
All right, then. We'll move to questions from the committee. Representative Gunderson.
Thank you, Chair Brewster. A question for Mr. Dahlke.
Mr. Dahlke.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Dahlke, I guess just a disclaimer, I'm from Libby, and Highway 37 goes right through on California Avenue and then crosses the bridge. And I repeatedly, throughout my tenure, have received calls that MDOT is piling up snow to the center of the road and impeding traffic. So just to let you know, I deal with this problem in a little different matter, but I can see where this bill needs a little tweaking to address exactly that problem. Do you know what the road width is on Mr. Howick's road in front of his business in Townsend?
Chairman, representative, members of the committee, I don't have that exact information available to me, the exact width of the right-of-way.
Okay. Is there, what would you suggest, or excuse me, Mr. Chair, follow-up, Mr. Chair, Mr. Dahlke, what would you suggest as a solution to snow removal to put into this bill?
Chairman, Representative, I'm not sure I have a good answer for that, as this is an encroachment issue, not a snow removal bill, but I would be happy to turn it over to our maintenance administrator if at any time we would like to talk to him.
And Mr. Chair, just one more follow-up. And Mr. Dahlke, that would be a great one, because I'm sure, without asking Mr. Howick, I'm sure they must run into the same issue in the wintertime, I'm sure. But yeah, if you could get back with the committee on that, it'd be interesting. If you give us the road width there, that would kind of be helpful as well.
We will do that right away.
Okay, yes. Thank you, sir. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Any other questions? Vice Chair Kohenauer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and that was awesome. For Mr. Dahlke as well, if I might. Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair and Mr. Dahlke. I'm a little, I just have a couple of questions about the indemnifying of the state issue. Can you talk to us about what that would entail? And is this bill enough legal cover, basically, for the city to indemnify the state?
So, Mr. Chair, Representative, legal opinions, I don't know if I can speak to those. I will say, I'll answer part B of your question first, that the MDT feels like this is a sufficient language to protect the agency and the state of Montana and its taxpayers. Your first question, repeat that to me again, if you would.
Yeah, that you answered my question. I think
okay.
You hit it.
All right.
Thank you. Any other questions from the committee? Representative Gunderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Dahlke, if I could just modify my request a little bit. If you could give me the numbers for the road width of Highway 37 on the north end before the bridge, and then Mr. Howick's in front of his business, I'd just like to compare the two to see.
Mr. Chair, Representative, we will get that information to you.
Thank you.
Great. Any other questions from the committee? Seeing none, Representative Dooling, would you like to close on your bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Representative Gunderson, approximate width of the right-of-way of Broadway Street in Townsend is about 52 feet, according to Mr. Howick, just ballpark guess. House Bill 198 does provide a simple solution. I worked on this bill last session, so it's, you know, kind of a revisit. We worked with MDT to get it to where we are right now. This solution grants authority to our local towns to regulate and promote commerce on the sidewalks of Main Street, Montana. No encroachment can be permanent, nor can it violate the Americans with Disabilities Act. House Bill 198 will allow our towns and their residents to determine for themselves what can be or cannot be allowed on the sidewalks so they can safely and effectively promote the businesses, commerce, and services, and in turn, hopefully boost the town's economy as well. And with that, I request a due pass. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Dooling. That will close this hearing on House Bill 198. We'll take a few minutes for the room to clear, and then we'll move on to the next one. Does anybody need a little five-minute break or anything? All right, let's come back at 4:15. High school, then
he's going on to
get a nice job.
And that's going to be his permanent duty station. Oh, okay. I've been stationed out there a couple times. Do you know what unit he's going to be assigned to out there? Oh. Is it really?
Well, I love that photo.
Hey, good job.
We'll restart the meeting in about 15 seconds. 15 seconds. All right. We'll be back in session. This hearing is on House Bill 215. Representative Beatty, would you like to present your bill?
Thank you, Chairman Brewster and members of the committee. For the record, my name is David Beatty, representative of House District 86, which is comprised of Hamilton and the immediately surrounding area. You have before you House Bill 215, a bill ensuring that legislative intent is clearly expressed in the public health statutes that govern the governing bodies of local boards of health. Last session, the legislature enacted House Bill 121, which delineates the respective duties and powers of local boards of health and the bodies that oversee them. The record of the hearings on that bill clearly shows that legislative intent is that the governing body be comprised of elected officials who are responsible to the voters in their jurisdiction, in the jurisdiction for which the Board of Public Health is responsible. House Bill 215 makes this intent explicit. It also provides for cases when a governing body may wish to include non-elected individuals, but provides that only elected officials may vote on matters before the governing body. House Bill 215 makes no substantive changes to current law. It simply provides clarity. Chairman Brewster, this concludes my remarks. I stand ready to answer the committee's questions.
Thank you, Representative Beatty. Are there proponents in the room?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Eric Bryson. That's B-R-Y-S-O-N. I'm here on behalf of the Montana Association of Counties. Mr. Chair, I want to thank the sponsor for bringing this bill forward, and I want to apologize to the sponsor for his willingness to negotiate with us in a previous session to try and get creative in the definition of that governing body. Representative Beatty warned me at the time that if there were any shenanigans played by local governments in trying to get creative and use additional flexibility, he would come back this session and he would fix it, and he's done that. He is a man of his word. Our request is because we had some unique characteristics with a central health district. We had some associations with health boards run and administered by nonprofits that we asked for the flexibility to allow the local governing bodies to determine, the local boards of health to determine through bylaws and interlocals what that governing body would be. And we trained every one of our health folks across the state that meant elected officials. I regret the fact that Representative Beatty has to bring this bill this session, and I fully support it. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there other proponents in the room?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Joe Briggs, for the record, B-R-I-G-G-S. I am the chairman of the Cascade County Commission. Unfortunately, and I'm quite proud to say that I supported House Bill 121 last time. We were all in this body talking about health districts. Unfortunately, in Cascade County, we have an MOU that dates back to 1974, based upon 1947 law with the city of Great Falls. The passage of 121 last time allowed an opportunity for us to try to fix a very bad agreement, in our opinion. Unfortunately, negotiating a settlement requires a willing partner. City of Great Falls' response to our conversations about the governing body was to sue Cascade County, and they got exactly what they asked for from the judge. And that was a ruling that, because of the language that talked about a city-county jurisdiction's MOU being able to govern the governing body, the Judge Best in Cascade County asserted that the existing Board of Health was the governing body, despite the fact it contains only two elected officials. My hope is now, once, and we are currently appealing that to the Supreme Court, my hope is that this body will pass this bill, it will be signed into law, and we can get back to the discussions of what should the health district in Cascade County look like, rather than arguing and paying lawyers to go dance before the Supreme Court. So I'd like to thank good representative for bringing this. I also apologize for the fact that somehow we're the ones who got sued over this by the city of Great Falls. But legislative intent was absolutely clear, and Judge Best chose to ignore that. So with that, I would stand ready for questions. I thank this committee for its deliberation in this matter and stand ready for questions.
Thank you, Commissioner Briggs. Are there other proponents? Proponents in the room, are there proponents online?
No, Mr. Chair.
Are there opponents in the room? Any opponents? Seeing none. Any opponents online?
No, Mr. Chair.
All right, we'll go to questions from the committee. Informational witnesses in the room? Thank you. Informational witnesses online?
No, Mr. Chair.
All right, now we'll go to questions from the committee. Representative Vice Chair Coronauer. Coronauer.
You had it right, and now you, Mr. Chair. And this is a question for Mr. Bryson. And Mr. Bryson, you might want your bill.
I'll try without, Madam. Mr. Okay. Chair, Madam.
Sounds good. On page 2 in line 9.
Only because I didn't have it.
Of course. Thank you.
Thank you.
At the end of that line, it does say that the entity whose voting members are all elected officials. Does that, I mean, is there ex officio members, anything on a governing entity that would preclude this from being used because of that word all? Because there would be, would there not, on some boards across the state that might have oversight of a local board of health that might have members that would not be elected?
Ms. Chair, Representative Coronauer, no. And I think this gets to the point of the bill last session. The whole construct was to allow boards of health to function as they always traditionally have, and to put a new layer in between the authority that was granted on in general health authority and boards of health to review. The idea was that if there's going to be promulgations of rules, if there were going to be regulations adopted, or certain public health authorities exercised, there would be a new entity that sits above the Board of Health that would be consisted of elected officials as the governing body. So this bill just clarifies the Board of Health can still operate. Cascade County and the city of Great Falls can still, if they come to an agreement on their MOU, have non-elected officials serve in that really important role as Board of Health members. But if they're going to create rules, issue ordinances, or exercise certain authorities, those are subject to approval by this new governing body, which must consist of elected officials. And I believe, I'm not speaking for Representative Beattie, but in the testimony last session, that's the level of accountability that was always contemplated. So if the Board of Health comes up with a great idea, something they legitimately can do, and it requires adoption of ordinances or regulations, it's reviewable by an elected body. That's what this bill does. That's what it was intended to do last time.
Follow-up question. Mr. Chair, and what I'm getting at, Mr. Bryson, is that that board that would oversee them is all elected officials.
Mr. Chair,
is that true that that entity would always all be elected officials, or would there be other non-elected members on that board?
Mr. Chair, Representative Coronauer, under the construct of this bill, it would consist of elected officials with voting authority. Representative Beattie has allowed provisions for participation in that, but the decision makers would be elected officials, as I understand it.
Mr. Chair, follow-up question for Representative Beattie, please.
Chairman Brewster, Representative Coronauer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Beattie. I just wanted to do a follow-up on that specific. The all is what is concerning me. That's at the end of line 9. So do you see it, or do you see anything resembling what I am having an issue with that might need to be taken care of?
Chairman Brewster, Vice Chair Coronauer. So it's... I am not exactly clear on precisely what your issue is, so let me just tell you what I think this line means and see if it's satisfactory. First of all, I want to make it crystal clear that decision-making authority resides with voting or with elected officials, period. And if for some reason there happen to be members of a governing body that, or they choose to have members of a governing body who are not elected officials, that those people would not, those persons would not participate in the actual voting on any regulations or rules or any other decisions being made by the governing body.
Mr. Chair, follow-up question.
Okay, one follow-up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And And the all at the end of line 9 is what is concerning, because if there are non-elected folks that participate on that board, it doesn't say, it basically says that that can't be termed a local governing body or a governing body, because it says all have to be all elected officials. That's where I'm having the concern. So what you just said is what I'm thinking you wanted to say, but I don't think that's what this says, Mr. Chair.
If I might respond, Chairman Brewster, Vice Chair Cullinar, going to line 9, it says we're speaking of an entity whose voting members are all elected officials. That would, the way I read that language is that would allow for other members to be there, but the voting members, those who actually approve regulations, are elected officials.
Mr. Chair, thank you for that clarification. I wanted to make sure we were all on the same page.
Other questions? Any other questions? Seeing none, Representative Beattie, would you like to close in your bill?
Thank you, Chairman Brewster, members of the committee. Thank you for a very concise hearing. It was interesting to sit through local government. I don't spend much time here. I spend most of my time in Section E, same place. I'd rather be in Section E. Sorry, you're a great committee. You know, I would have carried this bill under any circumstances, because I think it's important that legislative intent be clearly expressed. In the hothouse environment we found ourselves in last session, things are moving pretty quickly. You understand the challenges all of you understand the challenges we're operating under. You know, if I had hindsight, I would have written the bill exactly as you see it today. I think for the sake of posterity and so that communities around the state understand what the rules of the game are, it's important to have our statutes clearly written. I think that this satisfies that requirement and does correctly express legislative intent, but also provides a few provisions. For instance, the fact that you might have non-voting members on a board and make that allowance. And by the way, it also provides the idea that, for instance, consider the example where in some small county you may have the Board of Health consist entirely of the county commissioners. It would seem, silly to have require them to make a recommendation from that board on a regulation and then they have to convene another meeting in order to approve the recommendation they made, since they're a coincident body. So I think that I learned a little bit, as I fielded many phone calls over the interim on this particular issue, and you have a good bill in front of you. Please move it forward expeditiously so we can pass it into law and people will understand the rules of the game. Thank you, Chairman Brewster.
Thank you. With that, this hearing will be ended. Just for information, this Thursday we have one bill. I'm sorry, I don't remember the number. And Bob Story is coming to give us education on property taxes and how they relate to local government. And then Tuesday next week, we'll do executive on the 6 bills that we have pending for it. So I'll give you an idea of what's coming up. See if we have any questions. Representative Galloway.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So we're not going to do any E on these?
Not till
on Thursday.
Okay.
He said expeditiously.
I know what he said. He's not the chair. All right. Anything else? All right. We're adjourned.